Blog Talk Radio.
We even had our own conference yogi.
That's right, our own conference yogi. And what that means is that at break time, at lunchtime, and at the beginning of the morning sessions, we had a yoga instructor there to take us through some yoga stretches. So we call it a 3-minute stretch. And that 3-minute stretch helped to keep people engaged, energized, and ready to go for the next speaker or the ready to go for the next presentation. Whatever was coming up, it kept the speakers or it kept the individuals, attendees, excited and ready to go. And there were other things. And if you weren't there, well, all I can say is you missed a heck of a conference. You know, we had our standard goodie bags. And they weren't just a standard goodie bags. They were actually backpacks that said, get your EQ on. Get your EQ on. So everyone was going around talking about how they were going to get their EQ on after the conference or during the conference. They even came up with the idea of having a Facebook chat group so that people can become members of that chat group and sort of keep the energy going by posting things into the Facebook page, asking questions, making suggestions, so forth and so on. So I'm excited, still reverberating from the conference. However, we must move forward. We must move forward. And today we have a great guest, Dr. Stephen Oliver. Dr. Stephen Oliver, who is going to spend some time with us this morning around this concept of empathy and accountability in learning. I know some people think empathy, oh, that's an easy one. Well, we'll hear just what empathy is and how empathy can sometimes be misunderstood, okay? And then we're going to hear how it ties to accountability. In other words, you can't just be empathic, because if you're just empathic, maybe people will take advantage of you. So you need to be accountable also. So I'm not going to get into what Dr. Oliver is going to be talking about. Let me check and see if Dr. Oliver is with us. Let me roll over here and say, good morning, Dr. Oliver. Are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can hear you very well. Good morning. How are you?
Okay, great. Good morning, Dr. Hank, and good morning to everybody. And thank you so much for inviting me here to your radio show. It's an honor and a privilege, and I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. I'm glad you were able to take time out of your busy schedule just to spend some time with us. You know, we're a bunch of folks across the country, around the world probably, that are still getting our EI on, our EQ on from the annual conference that we had, I'm going to say last week, actually about a week and a half ago. So a lot of us are still feeling or reverberating from the conference. And I do wish you could have been there. I mean, that, it would have been a nice one, but I know that you had some other things that you were doing. So thanks for thinking about us. I really appreciate it. Dr. Oliver, sometimes we have callers that call in and ask questions or want you to maybe share a little bit more about whatever it is that you'll be sharing with us today. Would you be open to take a call if someone out there is interested?
Yes, definitely. Anybody has a call or question, I'm happy to answer the best I can. So sure, that's
okay.
Great.
Okay, great. The number to call, if you are a listener out there and you're excited about emotional intelligence as I am, you probably can't wait to make a call or get in to chat or make some comments or something. The number to call is 929-477-1423. That's 929-477-1423. So, Dr. Oliver, before we get started, a lot of people may not know that much about you, and obviously there's some that probably knows everything there is to know about you, hopefully not, but let's just take a couple of minutes and give us a little of your background so that we can know a little bit more about Dr. O.
Yes, great. Thank you so much. Well, I live here in Philadelphia, right in the middle of the city, So it's really cool. Go Phillies, go Eagles. Some people like those teams, others don't. Had to give that plug. Go 76ers.
Okay.
But I live in the middle of the city, and my background is working in human resources in healthcare a lot of my career before I went into academia. And I did recruiting, I did selection, I did employee relations, a lot of emotions there. And I did stand-up training, and mostly for hospitals and healthcare. And so I've worked for a lot of healthcare organizations, and then I did some independent consulting because I wanted to do other industries to see what it was like. But most of my background is around human resources and learning and development. Emotional
okay.
intelligence is something that I never sought out. It sought me out.
Meaning, now I got to hear this one.
Meaning as, you know, I started to do training and development, and then I started part-time to teach. I don't
okay.
really have a whole lot of hobbies or golf or anything. My hobby was teaching part-time. And so I taught human resource courses. And then, you know, a professor could not teach an emotional intelligence course. I didn't know anything about it. So I was handed the book. I was handed the instructional guide. I'm like, what is this topic? And so I studied and, you know, made it my own. And I'm like, wow, this is pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened was the class really responded well. And I could see there was a huge interest in it. And then it just started following me. This one fill-in class led to a small six-week session. Then
wow.
it led to a request to do many presentations. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. And then it led to teaching a 14-week academic course at the University of Virginia.
My.
And I've never looked back. And now it's not the only thing I do. I know there's many people who solely focus on emotional intelligence, but I
mm-hmm.
it's one of the main things in my, you know, my three main areas are emotional intelligence, human resource management, and leadership development. Now, they are all connected, and there's definitely emotional intelligence in human resources and in leadership, especially trying to teach, you know, new, younger leaders. And so that's kind of where I'm at. And I'm getting ready to write some papers on my experience teaching this because
wow.
a lot of, you know, what I loved what you said earlier, Dr. Hank, is emotional intelligence in action. A lot of people coach and a lot of people are managers and they're trying to improve their emotional intelligence. But what I do is I teach it, and that's my inaction is I teach it. And
okay.
there can be some emotion in just teaching.
Oh,
there's
absolutely.
Some people that want to be there. They're the enthusiasts. They want to be there, but then there's a lot of prisoners when you teach. So it's great. I really enjoy it. But teaching, that's the emphasis of my discussion today, is how I teach
okay.
this. And I really feel that this is related, whether you're a business manager, a coach, a teacher, a trainer, whatever. The empathy and the accountability can apply to all of this.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree. And you said that, you know, I'm going to call it this three-legged stool. You do EI, you do HR, and you do leadership development. So I'm going to call that a three-legged stool. So as we're going through the discussion today, could you just kind of maybe hit upon maybe how you see EI applying to any one of those three-legged stools? In other words, you're going to be talking about empathy and accountability in learning. So how might it show up in, let's say, basic EI, or how might it show up in HR, or how might it show up in leadership development? In addition, I have a bunch of questions here, about four or five questions that I'll probably ask along the way, and we may get a caller or two that'll call in. They may have things to say. So I'm not sure where our journey is going to take us today, but it will be taking us down an EI path, I'm going to say. So Just wanted to share that with you as we were going along. Okay.
I'm happy to. The irony is I'm the end of the semester is this week and next week, so I'm grading and getting everything cleaned up, which is, students are stressed out, and they're like, oh, my God, can we get this over with? Some are graduating. Can we just graduate?
Right.
But you know, there's stress on professors. We're trying to grade and get you there, and so it's there's stress both sides. And then the other thing is I'm actually preparing. This summer I'm teaching several classes, a human resource course and several leadership development courses, and I'm weaving emotional intelligence in both of those. So I'm happy to do the three-legged stool.
Oh, fantastic. Well, one of my first questions, I'm just going to jump right in and ask, what are some of the challenges you face with students both in the classroom and during your teaching semesters?
It's a great question, and I just spoke of that the other night. I've been teaching for almost 20 years, and I'm also a practitioner, so I get to do both consulting and teaching. But what I'm finding is a lot of students, not every, but a lot of students want answers, and they're distracted. And I used to blame millennials because I'm a baby boomer. I wanted to blame them.
Of course it's their fault.
But it's not. We all, at all ages, 18 to 90, we're actually 93 because my father is still alive. God bless him. And he has a mobile phone. And when I go see him, he's on his phone a lot. And I'm like, Dad, hello, I'm here. Hello, I'm sitting in the room with you. So it is not just younger millennials, younger people. We're all distracted. So in relation to your question, we're distracted. There's so much information coming at us. Now, I teach in two modalities. I teach face-to-face, and I teach online. And people always ask me, which is better, which is worse? And I just say they are what they are. You have different challenges in both, and you have different opportunities. Certainly the nonverbals, the facials, the group work in a live stand-up class is fantastic. Or when people are bored or tired or droopy or sleepy, you see that. That's right there. But those dynamics are still there online. An online class, you can see people if they show their face. But trying to get them to respond can be tough. Sometimes you'll ask a question. I'm a very interactive instructor, and I kind of cold call and ask questions. And sometimes there's just crickets, nothing. And what I mean by that, and you feel like you're in a motel ballroom at the airport telling, really bad jokes. And there's nothing.
Oh, I know that feeling.
I'm sure on your radio show that can happen, or when you present too.
Sure.
But I feel like people are more distracted. Some want immediate answers. And there's also some, like, I paid for this, so now you're giving me a B or a C or a D. And wait a minute, I paid for this. Hello? And I'm like, well, yes, you paid, or someone has paid for it, but you didn't do what was required, or you didn't get it. And that can be a challenge. However, there is what I do love about the millennials is I love their insight, and some stuff that I've been talking about for years, they have a new swing or a new slant or a new idea on it. And I'm like, wow, that is fantastic. I was talking about employment laws in a human resource course the other day, and two students asked something that I had never even really thought about, and I'm like, wow, that's so great. So I may have sounded negative.
What was that?
I'm trying to think. One was really technical. So we're going over all employment laws. So the Pregnancy Discrimination Act, and you cannot discriminate against a woman who is pregnant or gets pregnant. But then it connects to the Family Medical Leave Act, which is 12 weeks off a year. And so she said, well, what if the lady becomes pregnant right after she has her baby? She has her baby, brings it home, and then gets pregnant right away. And I was like, wow, that's something I hadn't really considered because that connects to that time frame. and the law. And so does that make her even more susceptible to being discriminated in the workplace? So that's just an example of how someone has another slant on a topic.
You bet. Yeah, because I was just listening to that as you were sharing that one. I was going to say, you know, that does happen, you know, well, and people often have to deal with that. Our employees often have to deal with that. You know, they jump right into, you know, one FMLA and they're back and before you know it. But on the other hand, it could be FMLA could be almost anything, you know, a death or a sickness of a spouse or a grandmother or someone that's in the immediate family. So, you know, the FMLA covers a lot of things, and the pregnancy leave one is just a small piece of what might
exactly
fall under FMLA, you know. So, yeah,
The other piece about that is there's so much emotions involved in employment law and employee relations.
Sure.
That the woman who is having the baby already has emotions around her new child coming, and then she may have emotions being worried she's going to lose her job or get fired. And then the manager may be very empathetic and have a strong sense of the social awareness, the third dichotomy. But then he or he may be pressured by the person above them to either let's let this person go or let's do something about this. And that creates a lot of emotions in the workspace. And certainly all of the employees around are affected. And again, it's not just pregnancy. It could be anything when someone has to take the family medical leave, as you suggested. So emotions play very high in this.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So what are some of the ways you can encourage students and employees then to get their work done and work through competing priorities in their lives?
So this is part of where the accountability and the empathy come into play. And I've had this in this semester and last year, and my example is I had two different students writing a senior thesis. One semester is a class, the next semester is writing. And writing for some can be great. It can be a nightmare for others. Most people don't like to write.
That's true. That's true. I was one of those.
And then you add academic writing on top of that, you know, all the American Psychological Association, APA, citing resources. You can't write about yourself. It's third person. I mean, it's a real nightmare. Well, in both instances, it was almost the same thing. The student moved, and the two of them had personal challenges in their life. And so they weren't coming to class, and then they weren't turning in deliverables. Now, this is run by a director, and they have a professor, that's me, who mentors, supervises, helps them get the idea going, gets them calmed down and reviews and has those really difficult conversations when the first drafts come in, because the first drafts are horrible. And I went through this too, and I was not a good writer. And I don't think I am now, but still I know how to edit. And so these conversations on top of their personal stress really, really got them to like disintegrate and melt down. And there were phone calls and tears. And so, but then the director was very strong because this was a new process for her program and she needed to make sure everybody was on board. And so she was kind of pushing and at first, you know, more like you got to turn in, you got to get this stuff done. And so where I came in was the mediator, the referee. And so the strategies that you asked were to have this empathy, to be kind, to listen to their stories, listen to what's going on, empathize with them, share some things that I may have had in my life that were similar. But then saying, okay, let's sit down and let's have the accountability. Let's have the honest conversation. This is the last thing that's in your way to graduate. And do you want to graduate? And you got to turn these things in. And you have to breathe, and you got to go back to your family and say, give me some bandwidth. I know you're going through change, and I know people, but can you give me bandwidth, and can you block time off? You know, a third student has 6 children, a father who's ailing moved in with her, a husband, a business, and I said, you have to tell all of them to give you 2 to 3 hours a week to do your paper. I said, go to the library.
Yes.
And he's the caretaker, and she holds the family together. But I had to have some strong and push back and say, this is a goal that you've been working hard on, and you can't let these competing priorities get in your way. And it's tough. It's a tough balance.
It is.
But it worked out. And then I had to go back to the director, who is a wonderful lady. She really, truly is wonderful and cares. But she herself had a lot of pressure on getting these students through. But I had to say, can you, like, just breathe and chill out just a little bit? Just breathe.
Just breathe. Just breathe.
That's been my motto for, like, 2 weeks. I just said that to somebody a few minutes ago because her paper – the ending is so messed up. I actually had to go almost lay down because it was so confusing.
Anybody who wants getting a headache from it.
Right. Be careful what you ask for if you want to teach. I hear so many people like, oh, I'd love to teach. And I'm like, oh, my God. But anyway, you know, again, from this dramatic sound, it's combining this true empathy. And that, again, comes from the third dichotomy. And again, other theorists might say it comes from any of the dichotomies in emotional intelligence, but truly from the literature that I read, it's in the social awareness and walking in their shoes. And I remember back to my own dissertation and the struggles I had during that time. And at first, you just don't know what you're doing. And then you finally, it clicks. One day it just clicks and you're like, oh, okay. But again, showing them that this is the accountability. And to me, this can translate to the workplace because so many workplace is driven by these hard deadlines and these real structured turnaround. And we're dealing with a very complex society now. You know, again, from my human resource management, it used to be you never came in, you never told what was going on in your life. You just did the work. And today, we are hiring the whole person. The whole person comes to work. All of their baggage. And if we can be more empathetic, because it costs so much to hire someone and it costs a lot to fire. And so if we can be more empathetic, but again, setting those ground rules, setting the expectations, being clear about them, and then also just reminding people because, I mean, today is Monday, right?
Monday the 22nd.
I barely remember this weekend. I barely remember what went on this weekend. And
it's,
so
it's gone. It's past now. So we have to look in the present and look ahead. Yes.
So that's just a little bit of that one story. So I hope that answered your question.
Oh, yeah. No, it does. It reminds me of I spent a number of years in academia teaching. I taught at the University of Redlands out in California in the California State system. And here in Florida, the UC or University of Florida system, UF system. And I tell you, you know, the students, they want a good grade. And let's put it this way. They want the best grade that they can get or the best grade you can give them, but they don't always want to work for it. And so when you start to share with them what's required, you know, they often provide some sort of pushback, but the main thing is, you know, some of the things that they share or talk about or concerns they have are important and are real, and that's where the empathy comes in, being able to relate to them and understand what their issues are. But as you pointed out, you know, but also hold them accountable that, you know, if you want to graduate, if you want to pass this course, you know, here are the requirements. You know, I can understand the issues that you're dealing with, or that the dog ate your paper, you know, those kinds of things. However, what's required is this, you know, and so you have to still hold their feet to the fire for things. So, you know, I applaud you for, you know, being in that environment and, one, enjoying it and keeping them on their toes to get the work done. You know, earlier I said that we might have a caller or two. It looks like we have someone on the line. You mind if I click over and see who's there?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Okay. You're on the Dr. Hank Show, and you're on with Dr. O. Who am I talking to this morning? Hello, you're on the Dr. Hank Show.
Hi, Dr. Hank. This is Matt Pearlston.
Oh, Matt. How you doing, sir?
Good, good.
Well,
how are you guys?
I know this might be a surprise to you, but that's a voice that you're probably familiar with, right?
I am, yeah. Dr. O and I went to high school together in Virginia.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. So,
he won't give the year.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That couldn't have been too long ago, maybe in the 80s, maybe?
No, nope.
We'll
okay.
Leave it at that.
So, Matt, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. You have any questions or comments for your high school chum?
You're doing great, Dr. O. This first time on your show. It's good information, good topic. I like your suggestion about accountability, just to remind people, just gently remind them, because you're right. A lot of people just plain old forget, and they go, oh, that's right. Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah. Well, let me jump back to Dr. O here. Doctor, what are some of the basic strategies on how to become more empathic with students and others in the classroom and perhaps at work? Do you have any strategies that you could maybe share, or some that you found works pretty much every time?
So, first of all, it's great to hear Matt's voice. He is such a wonderful champion for EQ, and also such a positive person. And it's just so ironic, you know, many, many years ago, going to high school with someone and then finding out years later you are doing some of the same thing. It's just so – it was so weird and wonderful. And I have not gotten to see him. I am hoping to travel to California this summer to visit relatives, and he's on my radar. But it's great to hear him, and his voice is wonderful. And I heard he did a great job at your conference.
Oh, he did.
I mean, just some of the, you know, getting ready to answer your question, some of the strategies go back to, you know, I was searching for another presentation last year. I gave this kind of presentation on accountability and empathy to faculty members, and I got to tell you, they were wonderful, but I was so nervous, giving a presentation to faculty members, because they can be very insightful. But the strategies, when I researched this, went back to elementary school. And, you know, they said greet the kid as they were coming into the classroom. Get to know what's going on in the child's life. There was nothing on adult education. And so at first I giggled, but then, you know, learning is learning. And so some strategies is to truly, as an educator, get to know your students, who they are, what their learning goals are, why are they in this class. Some are passionate about the topic. Some want to go on to get a master's degree, or some have a master's and want a doctorate. Some could care less, as I said earlier. They just want to finish the class and get out. But if you can, get to know them. What are their learning needs and outcome? Who are they? Now, again, you want to be careful and make sure that you don't cross the line and get too deep into students' life. Now, trust me, people will tell me stuff, and I'm like, oh, my God, I don't want to hear this. And I've heard almost anything you can name. And, you know, some students have a lot of emotional issues, and you have to work with those emotional issues. And I've had students in the classroom, especially around election time. I've had students on each side of the political strife go at it. And I'm like, okay, you're not being emotionally aware. You're not regulating or managing your emotions at all. So your grade's going to be impacted if you don't breathe and calm down. It really is intense. But again, get to know who they are, what their strategies are. Again, post all of those assignments and deliverables. And this, again, can be in the workplace. You know, what are the deliverables? What are the assignments? But as I said at the beginning of this discussion, we are all busy and we all are distracted. And different people react differently. So mm-hmm. I have the case of, like, I have two friends here who want to go to dinner in June, and they're already asking about June. And I'm like, it's April the 22nd. Are you kidding me? I have no idea what I'm doing then. But then I have a whole set of other friends that they're like, hi, I'm outside. I'm a block away from your house. Can we go to dinner? I'm like,
yes.
What? I'm down the street at the restaurant. Can you come down and join me? Or
yes.
Lunch? You know, so, you know, people are different, and you have to appreciate those different learning styles, communication styles. What I'm finding more and more, both online and face-to-face, is you have to keep doing reminders. So every week, remind, here's where we are. This is what we're doing. This is what's due. This is what you're responsible. It's astounding at the beginning of a semester when you give the final project, you talk about it, than a week before. So what's the final project? Our group hasn't done anything all semester. So.
All semester. In the last couple of weeks, they want to get going on this project that everyone else has been working on for 2 months.
Exactly. So I know I'm talking, again, a lot about the classroom and teaching, but again, this is my emotional intelligence and action. I believe very truly, you know, it's all about setting expectations for those around you, even in friendships, but at work or in the classroom, and then constantly reminding people. And then, you know, also asking them to consider focusing and using some mindfulness. So I have another really great paper that we're working on today, and she's finishing up. It's a senior thesis. And so some of her research has found that we're in a distracted society by social media and by internet and texting. And so the use of both emotional intelligence and mindfulness can help us. I default a lot to Dr. Daniel Goleman. He's not the only person out there, but he's one of the stronger theorists who are out there. And I default to a lot of his work and his books.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the books he wrote in 2015 is Focus, the Hidden Driver of Excellence. And so his premise is that multitasking is really screwing up our brain, and that we really can't
multitask, you know. The brain does not
exactly
multitask. Yes.
You're
anyway,
exactly
go ahead.
Right.
Jump in there on that one.
I mean, that was in the late 80s and 90s. Or late 90s, multitasking. You got to multitask. And I even saw that in job description.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, oh, my
yep.
God. But his premise and some of the research is this is really impacting our brains. And we're not, you know, the neuroscience around it is we are not focused enough. If we're not focused, it can impact our thought process, our actions, what we're doing, even some of our health and well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And so my student is writing more about using mindfulness and using, you know, taking a moment and living right today and preparing and calming down before you enter your day, whatever you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, especially if you have something very big, like a project due at work, or you're giving a presentation, or you're having a really difficult conversation with a loved one, is to have some of that mindfulness and to really breathe and be centered and be in tune with your body and be in tune with who you are. And this can help us. All of this can help us. So that can be a strategy into, you know, trying to, you know, work on both accountability and empathy. It's focused mindfulness and the whole relationship management you have with people.
Right, right. Let me jump over to Matt, because I know Matt is doing work in EI and certainly is working with, has several programs out there. And so, Matt, when I ask that question, I'm going to kind of roll it over to you a little bit in terms of strategies for on how to be more empathic. And not necessarily with students, but since you're looking at students too in some of your work, maybe you have a thought or an idea on that?
Actually, I do, but I wanted to, on that note, my wife is listening too, Paula, and she wanted to know, Dr. O, you mentioned the word strategies to find out what to be empathetic with your students and to learn what their strategies are. Would you mind saying a little bit about that sounded like a good one.
I mean again, when the semester starts, you know, you call the roll and you see all these eyes looking at you, and then, you know, you give the syllabus out and you give some are rolling
like
their eyes, some are looking down
the
on
eyes
their phone.
Looking at you.
But I mean, as far as strategies, again, what you want to do is try to connect with as many students as you can. Find out why they're there in that classroom. Talk to them. See if you can, as each class period goes on, at the beginning, I always try and go up and ask people what they're doing and how they're doing. And they'll tell you about their other classes. They'll tell about, some of them are getting ready to graduate, their interviews. Some will come out and tell you that they have severe problems at home or they can't get to class because of economics.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, as a strategy, connecting with them as best you can, being careful not to cross that line, and then checking in with them. I mean, usually the red flag comes when a student misses one class, two classes. That can happen. Sometimes it can be three or four. Then that's a huge red flag, and so you've got to check in with them. Sometimes they're really angry at you. Why are you coming at me? Why are you being so intrusive? Well, first of all, I want to know why you missed class and didn't call me. What would your job do? If you missed two periods, what would your job do? Well, professor, they would fire me. I'm like, well, you're getting ready to get fired from the class.
Getting
so
fired
again,
in
the strategy.
Yeah, you're getting an F, yeah.
Well, I had a baseball player. He was on the baseball team, hot shot kid. And he's like, I didn't come to class, I overslept or I blew it off. He said, but I did go to my baseball practice. And I said that, what would you do if you missed the practice? He's like, I'd be off the team. I'm like, well, you're going to be off my team here. So again, it's checking in with them. And then again, you know, trying to have some empathy, walk in their shoes. But there is some BS out there. A lot of students and employees don't tell the truth. And the dog did eat the paper, or grandma died five times in the same semester, or whatever. And sometimes then you have to have the strategy of being very strong and saying, okay, here are the consequences. Here's what will happen if you don't. Now, some professors are really hard. They're like, and they shut off the emotional intelligence, and they're like, oh, well. And they could have had a real honest issue at home, but they're like, oh, well, you failed that 25% of your grade, and there's no empathy there. So I try to have empathy, but sometimes you have to be very hard. So it's just this ongoing, another strategy is this ongoing communication of with your students as best you can. Now, I presented 2 weeks ago to two different classes, nursing students, 50 students, and that's a lot to keep track of, to have a class.
It is. It really is.
Yep. So I don't know, Matt, I hope this answered you and your wife's question about strategies. These are just some.
Yeah, that was very helpful. Thank you. It sounds like you just kind of get to know the students a little bit and have, like you said, empathy for them and figure out what's up with each one. We're getting ready to do an online class, and I know you do most of your teaching online, and it must be even trickier to do it without ever meeting them personally, right?
It's very difficult because, again, you can't see all of the immediate reactions. You can't see the nonverbals. And many people are distracted. There's that mute button. And I wrote an article about this, and the title was, Hold on, I have to go check the chicken. Difficulties in online learning. And, you know, people come home, and that's why a lot take the class, is they come home, they put the button on mute, they go check the chicken or whatever dinner, they go put their kids to bed. Some of them are watching, you know, the Eagles or the 76ers playoffs. I mean, I've had to say, turn that TV off. Turn it off. I know you're watching it. And some giggle and like, oh, my God, how does he know that? So it can be really hard to connect. However, dialogue in the chat box, they're writing. You can build community. And there is a community in a regular synchronous online class. Well, and also an asynchronous. An asynchronous means that you never talk. You're writing and doing assignments. And that's really, really difficult to really know the student. But there can be some community. But again, it's just checking in and probing. And I like to use my, you can see I'm kind of wound up. It's the third cup of coffee today. But
that's okay.
I can tell Dr. Hank, you have a wonderful voice and you're engaging. Matt is completely engaging. By the way, Matt has come and guest lectured at my emotional intelligence class a couple of times, and rave reviews. They loved him. Very engaging. And so
yes,
that's another
is.
Piece. You know, how do you engage people? You really have to engage them like you're standing there. But it's not easy at all.
No doubt. The other thing was I was impressed with when working with you in the UVA class and such was having them work together and let them engage with each other. That I'm sure that's quite powerful too, right?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing is online learning has come so far. I've been teaching it for 15 years, and the technology is really, really advanced. And so a functionality is you can take a room of 25 students and you can break them into groups and you can give them a discussion. They go, they talk about it, say it's 15 minutes and you're going to come back and your group is going to give an answer. And so that's part of the strategy to make it like you're truly in, a live class. You know, my doctoral degree is in adult learning and adult learning education. And that's, I'm just passionate about activities, all activities. You know, there's so many instructors that just do didactic lecturing and they fall asleep. Now, these are subject matter experts and they're good at their subject, but people don't want to hear you lecture for 2 hours.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear you less more than 15 minutes. I mean, I've been babbling away almost an hour here, but people really don't want that. They want this interactivity. And especially at night, the adult learner at night, the class starts at 5 and 9. I mean, they're done.
I've done that one, you know, where, you know, they've worked all day and at 5:30, you know, they're in the classroom at 6 o'clock, you know, and they're kind of active and, you know, 6:30, they're still a little bit active. Then you have a lunch break and then you come back and their energy is just pretty much gone after that. So, you know, my rule of thumb was after the evening break or something like that, was it's activity now from now on until the end of the class, because you just had to get the adult learners engaged, particularly in activities and moving around and talking to each other, because, you know, like we were saying, you know, they've been at work all day and so now tiredness is beginning to set in and they get sleepy on you, and if you're just going to lecture, you've lost them. So I like to have
like
that interaction.
8 o'clock is like the dead zone. It's really the dead zone, and you're right, Dr. Hank. You have to really, really do that. But it's still really powerful. Learning is powerful, and so many people say, I would never want to do an online class, or how can you do that? And I keep saying it's not going away. It just isn't, you know, online learning is growing so much more. My vision is, you know, I'm talking into my iPhone, and my vision is my iPhone is going to be a lot bigger in a few years, and classes are going to be on the iPhone. Some students can still do that, and that's really what I believe is happening, is we're going to be walking around, you know, with our phones and talking. But again, there's a lot of emotional intelligence in this online learning. Emotions come through.
Well, that's what people are trying to figure out, you know, is how does emotions come through in the online learning piece. We actually had three individuals, one in particular, talk about that at the conference and how he applies, you know, emotional intelligence in some of the work that he does in some of his online courses. But, you know, he also shared that, you know, let's say 10 years ago, a few of the Ivy League schools, a few of the Harvards and Yales had online courses. And in today's environment, both Harvard and Yale is offering online learning because it is just simply the way to go and is what we're going to be dealing with in the future. So you're right on target when you're talking about it's going to show up on the iPhones or the iPads or whatever the Android devices are. And you've got to be able to keep the attention of the learners in some way when you're doing that, because online learning is not going to be going away. You know, it's here, and maybe it's not here to stay, but it's here for a while. You know, we always transition through things, so probably transition from online learning to, you know, some sort of immediate transfer of knowledge, you know, from some sort of hypnotic way or something like that,
right,
where we can simply look at something and the information will be transferred in. So we will move from online learning at some point, but it's going to be another medium that we are not quite aware of right now. But it won't be like the quote the old days, like when, let's say, when you and Matt were in high school.
Right, that and that was the old days. Well, and one other thing that I would suggest is stories. Stories are so powerful.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm really blessed and blessed because I have built relationships like Matt, and these wonderful people come in and they give their spiel, but they always tell a story about themselves. And, you know, Matt's story is really powerful, and I'm sure you've had him on the radio or will have him, but he tells a powerful story. And to me, I call it the hook, and then that gets people engaged. And then he can talk about, you know, his theories and his principles based on his stories. And most of my guest speakers do that. And then also another strategy is creating activities to get people to pull out their own. You know, so much of the class I teach is about the workplace, and people love to go off and talk about the workplace. Oh, my God. A couple times I've had students, I'm like, okay, we got it. Down. We know we don't like your boss, all right? This is the seventh comment, all right? Down. So stories are powerful.
You know, you mentioned that about stories, and often what I would run into with students around that, they would say, but I don't have a story. You know, I don't have any stories. They don't see life or things that they do on a day-to-day basis as a story. And until, you know, they get into reflecting on, you know, their time at the park or their time when they went skiing or their time, you know, and the more you get them to talking about it, they will find that, as we say, everyone has a story, you know. It's just, you know, being able to visualize and recall those stories, because I think they're just so important. You know, and I think that's a great part of the learning process is stories. Absolutely.
Yes, definitely.
Well, I have one other question before I let you go, and that is around the accountability piece, but maybe moving away from the accountability piece, but moving more into the humor, because I think humor is a pretty important piece. But how do you use appropriate sense of humor to build relationships in the classroom and with students?
Well, I think you've heard a little bit of it already in this discussion. Humor is so powerful. I think it's fantastic, and I try to use it as appropriately as I can. Every now and then I'll slip and say something like, oh my goodness, I can't believe I said that. The majority of people tend to like my humor. Self-deprecating humor, I think, is fun. But you have to be careful. I also am so blessed. I teach business students, but I also teach nursing students. And so you have to be careful about the stories around healthcare hospitals with nurses. So I think humor is good, but empathize with them. Walk in their shoes. I mean, I have worked in healthcare, and, you know, working for a hospital and when people are not at their best is really tough. And so you've got to be very careful about it. There are some things you can say about yourself and the stress that you're under and have humor there. But I just think humor is so powerful. And every now and then I'll get someone that doesn't even look up or flinch or smile. And I just, I almost go home and say prayers for them because I'm like, come on, you got to lighten up. We got to have some humor. But I use it a lot. And one thing I am very passionate about is what's going on in our world, especially the business students, because I believe so powerfully they must pay attention to our world if you're going to be a good leader. But there's a lot of awful things going on in our world daily, even on Easter Day, you know. People were killed in Sri Lanka, and, you know, it's awful. And so, but you have to somehow, in many of the stories, not ever have some kind of humor or roll your eyes or say, all right, why'd that happen? So it's a balance.
Yes, go ahead. Sorry, just picking up some audio sounds here.
Okay.
Hopefully that didn't distract you.
I mean, that was pretty much it. So,
well, Matt, any final thoughts or comments on your end?
Yeah, I totally agree about the humor thing. One of my strong points, I think, and one of my biggest tools I use. Of course, we've got to be careful.
We're just about out of time. So before we close out, I just want to go and say to both Dr. Oliver and to Matt, both who was surprised calling in, thanks for being on the show today. I really appreciate your taking the time to be with us. Hopefully you'll be able to be with us again at a future date. I'm looking forward to hearing more from Dr. Oliver or Dr. O, and also looking forward to hearing more from Matt. So thank you both for spending time with us today. Really appreciate it.
All right.
Yeah, thank
you
for this opportunity. And
great.
I hope to come to your conference next year, and I'd love to talk to you again. So thank you both. And Matt, you're on my radar to talk this week.
Great.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Dr. Hank Show, and we had two really well-thinking, sharp-minded EI individuals. That was Matt Perlstein from California, and he was a speaker at our conference just a couple of weeks ago. But also, more importantly, we had Dr. Stephen Oliver, who spent time with us today talking about this whole notion around empathy and accountability, and that you know, you just can't be empathic without holding people accountable. So I really appreciate them taking the time to be with us today. Look forward to the next show. The next show, remember, we're on monthly now, the last, the fourth Monday of the month. So it's the fourth Monday of the month. So we'll be back. Hopefully you'll be here with us. If not, you can always send an email to the Dr. Hank Show at gmail.com. I will be happy to answer any questions that you have. Look forward to seeing you back here. As we say, same time, same bad channel, same bad place, or in this case, the same Dr. Hank place. Thank you for being with us, folks. I appreciate it.